What I'm going to talk about today is about repeat victimisation, and in particular the time course of repeat victimisation is what I want to focus on. It's important to say that this research is part of a larger body or a larger research programme that we're conducting at the moment, and that there are other collaborators in the room, including Vim, George, Mike Townsley and Hank. So it fits into a wider picture, and it's just one part of the jigsaw puzzle. Okay, what I want to talk about today is patterns of repeat victimisation, as we see it in the actual data itself. Move on to some of the theories of repeat victimisation, why it occurs and when it takes place, and then talk about a very simple kind of electronic thought experiment, if I steal some of John's slides, to try and actually understand which of the theories of repeat victimisation are most likely to explain the patterns that we see. But just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, repeat victimisation is where the same property or person is victimised on more than one occasion. Some basic findings: we know that the risk of burglary is concentrated in two areas, so we get these hotspots of crimes, which you've seen throughout the week already. But we also know that prior victimisation, for instance at the household level, is an excellent predictor of future risk. And we know this to be the case not just for burglary, it extends across other crime types such as domestic violence. I was determined to get some acronyms in there, so I apologise. DV, domestic violence. CIT, cash in transit robbery, so this is where SecureCorp or Brinksmat are delivering cash to a post office, for instance, and they're intercepted on their journey and actually the money is stolen. John Eck recently did a piece on, it was hotel theft, wasn't it? Theft from hotels, not stealing hotels. Actually quite a challenge, although in New Zealand a couple of years ago, they did tell us a story about a hotel that they'd had to move because they wanted to put a train track through it, so rather than knocking it down, they picked it up and moved it. So it does seem plausible, but it's not. Okay, the point is, of central importance, is that we see repeat victimisation across a range of crime types. The other thing that we tend to find is that when it occurs, it does so quickly. So you'll have an incident of burglary, and then if a repeat is going to happen, it typically happens very quickly, so within 1 or 2 weeks. And I'll illustrate that with some data in a minute. We also find that repeat victimisation tends to be highest in high crime areas. I want you to kind of remember that fact because it's relevant when we come back to theoretical explanations. The important point about repeat victimisation and the reason that we study it and try to understand it is that it has the potential to reduce crime quite considerably. If we can actually focus resources at particular locations and we have some certainty that crime is going to occur at those places and we know exactly when to put our crime reduction resources there, we have the potential to reduce crime quite significantly. But that's if we understand the phenomenon in the first place. Okay, these are some simple data to give you an idea of the extent of repeat victimisation. This is for 4 years' worth of recorded crime data for the county of Merseyside in the United Kingdom. What the table shows you is on the left, it's the number of victimisations that take place at different homes. So homes that are unvictimised, victimised on one occasion, twice, three, four, five, and so on. And what we see is that large amount of the population, just over 500,000, are actually unvictimised over that entire period. So the risk of burglary victimisation is actually quite low. And then we get an idea of the actual concentration across different homes. So we see that 41,000 homes are victimised on only one occasion, about 3,500 are victimised twice, so about 7,000 burglaries occur at those homes which are victimised on two or more occasions. So it's just giving you an idea of the general concentration. At the bottom here, I have the total number of crimes for the four-year period, and in brackets we have the total number of incidents of repeat victimisation. On the right-hand side here, we have a simple Poisson model. So it's just giving us an estimate of how much repeat victimisation we'd expect to take place if homes were targeted on a random basis, so it wasn't the same offenders returning to those properties. So what we actually see in the observed data is around about just under three times as much repeat victimisation than would be expected if the risk of burglary was homogeneous across households. Okay, so when does repeat victimisation take place? How much time elapses between the first event and
sorry,
the second?
Can I ask a question about the previous slide?
Yep.
Is there any, behaviour on end, if you have any idea like what it looks like, is it also exponential? Or is it
sorry, can you say that again?
The dependence of the number of victimisation events is on end. Is it exponential in end, or is it slower than exponential? Do you have any thought about that? Or?
So do you mean the number of repeat victimisations? How is it with the crown of the lake? Okay.
No, it's not the next slide.
Just asking, is it Pareto lake or?
Yeah, it is a constant. Yeah, it does show parallel distribution, but I don't have
it. It is parallel.
Yeah, we typically find that across different prime types. John, you have that in your work.
Well, it's something I've thought about. It doesn't fit exactly a power law, but it looks like it should. My hunch is it's largely due to non-reporting. That if you actually knew what the crime were, you'd find a lot more repeat. And it probably, and my guess is that it would fit, which is one of the reasons I think simulations are so important, is because you can sort of back into them.
Yeah, see, it's actually a really good point. Thanks for raising that, and thanks for translating. We do suspect that as people are victimized more and more, they're less likely to actually report subsequent crimes, presumably because the police response wasn't sufficient, or if you don't have insurance, there's no reason to actually report that crime. So we're probably grossly underestimating the extent of victimization.
I'm just wondering about adjusting the figures to account for that non-reporting.
Right.
That might make it fit something.
Right. We'd have to make some assumptions in order to do that. And I'm showing a simple Poisson model here just to show what chance might roughly be, but those differences in reporting levels, my intuition would be that they would vary across different types of homes, so there'd be a heterogeneous issue to these data. But I don't want to dwell too much. I'm just going to take you through some basic stuff first and then get onto the stuff which is probably still more basic than what I'm starting with, but anyway, we'll continue. So, the time course of repeat victimization. So how much time typically elapses between sequential events at the same property. The x-axis shows you different intervals of time, starting from 1 week, going up to 104, so we've got a 2-year interval. The y-axis shows the number of repeat burglaries which occur at those different intervals. What we see is a very distinct, basically negative log pattern to these data, so it decays very rapidly. Most repeats occur very swiftly, within 1 to about 4 weeks of an initial event. And I plotted the log. Okay, why do we actually think that repeat victimization takes place? What is the mechanism actually driving this? And this is important for a couple of reasons, not least because if we're trying to prevent it, we really need to understand what's actually going on. Now, two theories which have been put forward to explain repeat victimization. They at first appear to be kind of opposing theories, but they are actually compatible, but let's take them as opposing to begin with. So the first is the event dependency account of repeat victimization. The idea is that when you've been the victim of crime on one occasion, the probability of being victimized in the future is actually elevated as a consequence of that initial event. So something about the first event increases future probability of risk. We look at interviews with offenders, we look at George's work, or we take an example from the Ryan Decker stuff. Interviewing offenders that have actually committed repeat victimization does give us some evidence in favour of event dependency. I put up this quote from Ryan Decker because I liked the English. Let's see if I can read it. I always go back to the same places because once you've been there, you know just about when you've been there before and when you can go back again. And every time I hit a house, it's always the same time of the day I done been before because I don't know there ain't nobody there. Okay, so the sort of interpreting this, we get sort of the feeling of Marcus's routine activities theory coming into here. Offenders are going back at certain times because they're making assumptions about the routine activities of the victims. We also have a bounded rationality to their thinking. They're making vaguely rational choices about when to go back. Other interviews are quite insightful. A Scandinavian study by Erickson. Quote from an offender at the top, the house is associated with low risk, they're familiar with the features of the house, and they went to get things that they'd either left behind or they went back later when goods had been replaced. UK study by Ken Pease and colleagues, one offender reported that once you've been to a place, it's easy to burgle because you're familiar with the layout, you can get in and out much quicker.
Shane, how is that? So one thing is very different in the US, I mean, my house is the same as the other 40 down the street.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, all of the UK is in trouble. So. But that's not the same in the US. So.
Right. And there are other things which will vary along the street. So, I mean, access routes, so the shape of the street in front of the house.
How does repeat to the same street differ? not
repeat. You mean actually burglaries are carrying out the same.
So if I don't burgle this one, I'll burgle one too long.
Right. Mirror repeats.
Yeah, yeah, I think. Can we come back to that at the
sorry,
end?
Yeah. Yeah.
Neil's heard my stuff before, and he's.
No, I can't remember this.
Looking like a different one.
No, I'm not saying I can't remember. I can't remember what the result is.
We'll come back to it. It raises a very good point. It took us quite about 20 years or so to get to, so. Forgive Neil for that. Yeah, we'll come back to that at the end.
So, from what you presented here, you're pointing to the fact that the same offender comes back.
Yes.
Do you have an idea how many repeated victimizations occur not caused by the same?
Okay, again, we'll let's come to that in a minute. Let's basically, the point of what I'm trying to do, or the research I'm going to talk about, is trying to estimate that how often that would actually occur, and talk about some of the difficulties in actually coming to those estimates, because it's actually quite hard. For instance, in ethnographic interviews, to say, so if I'm interviewing here and I say, well, how many times did you burgle a home that Neil previously burgled, but you don't know Neil and you don't know when he went there? It's kind of hard to get an answer from interviews with offenders, so there's a challenge to sort of estimating that. That's what I'm kind of trying to do with what I'm going to talk about. Returning back to the results of some of the interviews with offenders, the Erickson study. And that about 76% of the offenders interviewed did actually say that they'd committed repeat victimisation and purposely went back to homes previously burgled. In a Dutch study by Clemens, they found that of solved repeat burglaries, so this is using data recorded by the police with respect to detections, found that about 63% of all the repeat burglaries that had been cleared up, it was the same offender that committed the repeat offence and the antecedent. Now remember, one thing to point out about this is that they were looking at repeat victimisations irrespective of how much time had elapsed in between events. So if we were only looking perhaps at those repeats that occurred within a week of an initial event, that 63% might go up quite substantially. But overwhelmingly, the way that we've kind of interpreted these findings is that they are in favour of the event dependency account. They suggest that the same offender returns to previously victimised property. Okay, the alternative is the risk heterogeneity account of repeat victimisation. And I put up a reference up here to Nagin and Paternoster, and two articles that they wrote about risk heterogeneity and something they call state dependency. Decided to rename it from state dependency to event dependency because somebody pointed out, I think it was Mike, that people might assume state dependency meant dependency on the state welfare, and that's not what we're talking about here. So for clarity, we have event dependency. If you're interested in the differences between these two theories, I do recommend the Nagin and Paternoster pieces. They talk actually about criminality, but I'm going to refer it here with respect to victimisation. The point they make is that even if the risk of burglary were homogeneous across homes, we'd actually expect some repeat victimisation, which is what I've shown you already using a simple Poisson rule. But what we actually know is that risks vary across homes, so we have heterogeneity of risk across all households. As a consequence of this, we may actually see the patterns that we observe for repeat victimisation due to time-stable differences in target attractiveness across homes. So it's just the case that different offenders will target a particular household because that household is attractive to them and promises to be a good opportunity for crime. So this stability that we see with respect to prior victimisation predicting future victimisation is just as a consequence of variation in time-stable differences in risk across homes. So what happens is when we analyse the data on aggregate, which is what I've done in the slides that I've shown you already, we may be just seeing an illusion, which is generated by risk heterogeneity across different households.
Didn't the graph you showed of the time course of repeat victimisation, doesn't that refute that?
That's kind of what we'd all thought, but and logically, you kind of hope that that's what it does, but time and time again, in having papers reviewed or at conferences, I'm constantly asked, yeah, but why does it have to be a returning offender? Why can't it just be that some homes are more attractive than others, and different offenders target those properties? So I agree entirely.
But then wouldn't, I mean, if that were the case, you would expect a much more homogeneous
absolutely.
Time. I mean, why should it be that a week after you got...
That depends on the time scale of the security devices. I think it takes two or three times before the guy gets a security system. There are no time scale.
There's also, let's say you're never home and your car's never in the driveway. That's going to be true whether the first one is actually causing the second and third, and or whether there's an independent cause, so as the driver, there's nobody there, at your house is basically an easier target.
Imagine an apartment complex where somebody finds out that a place has been targeted as a storage area, and word travels very quickly, so now somebody else goes, ah, great idea, I saw some tires I needed in somebody else's storage area.
Similar to that, for one city we have 18 years worth of all of the crime data. So what you were doing it monthly, is that what you were measuring your time difference?
Weekly.
Weekly, okay. Well, we had a student who did it starting in the middle of the 18, instead of starting at time zero and moving forward,
yeah.
You start in the middle and you move forward and back. So you don't have a time zero, so you're moving back and you're moving forward. And if you repeat it and you look at it daily, you find a similar drop. If you do it weekly, you find a similar drop. If you do it, it's pretty much, it's very interesting about the scale, but in looking at the cases more closely, when you get down to the weekly, for the way that there's repeats at the same address, it's frequently come back for the rest of the loop.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's, so the reason for it, the repeat, may be attracting different types of offenders. That's something you have to address.
Right.
The time order.
I think it's important that we'll remember that these things can change it. Your illustration of permanent burglary, right? So if you're dealing with shoplifting, you might have some of the same characteristics.
Yep.
Armed robbery of banks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of repeats in that, but the causes maybe can be slightly different. So I would think that the various balance between these two hypotheses would change depending on the kind of repeat you're dealing with.
And also thinking about that curve, we've got probably different explanations for different ends of it. So
right.
Towards the left, we've got this kind of event dependency, and towards the right, it's probably more of a risk heterogeneity. I agree with you entirely, but the point is that there is debate within the literature as to which of these explanations holds the most validity and offers the best explanatory power. I'll come on to why risk heterogeneity might generate that time course in a minute, even though I don't agree with it.
It's one simple thing that people steal something and then come back a certain time later to steal the replacement.
Yes, yeah. That's entirely the event dependency idea, really, that you go back because you know the lay of the land of that property, you know it's a good opportunity.
And they've got to replace it on the insurance.
Yeah. Or you may have stolen, in the case of burglary, you've stolen a TV, you didn't get the remote, so you're not going to get much money. So no one, who's going to get up and turn the channel?
You got the wrong remote.
Well, indeed, yes. And that frequently happens.
Yeah, sure. I think, though, that for every anecdote about why there would be a tendency or clustering like this, there would also be, you could also find an anecdote for why there might be inhibition. Like for the victim, as you were saying, like the victim of the burglary might instantly set up an elaborate defense against future burglars.
We've all seen Home Alone, or some of us have, but to forget that film. But child makes preparations to try and thwart the burglars, but
just to follow up on this, just a quick question. Offenders and targets are not distributed evenly through space.
Absolutely.
So you can imagine different possible processes.
Yeah.
And that's empirically doable.
Yep.
Have you looked at that? Because that might solve your problem.
Yeah,
just
that's
right there.
What I'm going to talk about in a few minutes.
Okay.
Thank you very much. So introduces what we're coming to. So, and that's exactly the point, really, is that the idea is that across homes or across a county or an area, you have different Poisson processes potentially generating the patterns that we're actually seeing. And I'll explain a little bit more in a second. Just drawing on the Nagin and Paternoster piece and their explanation why or how risk heterogeneity might occur. So let's imagine that every home across an area, be it a county or a country, has a different risk associated with it. But that risk is actually time stable. The way to sort of think about this in a simplistic way is each home basically has an urn. It has a number of balls in that urn. And it has a division between red and blue balls. Red balls are basically bad. It means the more red balls you have, the greater risk of victimization you have. The more blue balls, I'm not going to make a rude joke, but the more blue balls you have, the lower the risk of victimization. What they suggest is that any particular point in time, the risk of you actually being victimized is determined by the ratio of red to blue balls, and then a random factor. So it's not the same offender returning to the property, it's just the attractiveness of the particular location which appeals to different offenders. Okay, so it's kind of easy to understand why that might actually explain the spatial concentration that we see for repeat victimization. Some homes are simply more attractive, then they're going to be victimized on more occasions than others. But how might that explain the time course of repeat victimization? Well, the argument kind of goes something like this, that if we're looking at this distribution, high-risk homes, because they're high-risk and they get victimized frequently, would dominate this proportion of the graph, because the time interval between events has to be short because they're being victimized many times. Low-risk homes, because they're only victimized a few times, if it occurred randomly, if repeat victimization occurred randomly and it wasn't the same offender, on average, the interval between events would be quite long because they're only being victimized one or perhaps two times. Medium risk homes, on the other hand, would dominate the middle part of the graph. So the explanation as it goes is that it's a ruse of heterogeneity or an artifact of aggregating our data which generates this time course of repeat victimization. So what we typically think when we see that time course is that any home which has been victimized on one occasion is at a greater risk of repeat victimization, and subsequent events are likely to happen quite quickly. But it may be the case that instead, risks vary very differently across different types of homes. Right, just in case anybody needs any convincing, I want to put in a slide on why we actually care about this stuff. Why is it interesting to look at repeat victimization? Wesley Scogan is famously quoted as saying that crime is concentrated on the same people and places, and that this has potential for crime control is one of the most important criminological insights of the decade. So it underscores criminological thinking about how important this phenomenon is. So it's important that we study it just to extend our thinking in terms of criminology, but it also informs or could inform crime reduction policy if we've actually got it right. First, with respect to crime prevention, if we know exactly when and where crimes are going to take place, we can get there in the first place. If we think about Marcus's multiplier that he talked about at the beginning of the week, we might not just be preventing one crime, but a series of crimes that flow from that. If we then link that to detection, if we can actually send police officers to the right place at the right time, and we can actually apprehend offenders committing a crime in progress, then we can clear up many crimes and prevent them from committing those in the future. And with respect to detection, we're not necessarily saying we assign a police officer to a particular home, but we might install silent alarms that would trigger a police response. We don't need to have too many alarms, we just need to know exactly when and where to place them. Okay. So what have we actually done so far with respect to studying repeat victimization? Well, we've taken a number of different approaches. The first is the analysis of victim data, so such as I've shown you already, where we analyse crimes which are reported to and recorded by the police. Secondly, we can look at survey data, such as that collected as part of the British Crime Survey or the National Crime Victimisation Survey. And certainly research has actually looked at those data. We can also analyse detection data, so crimes which have actually been cleared up by the police. One of the big problems with those data is that the police aren't particularly effective at solving volume crime. So for the crime of burglary, police typically solve around about 10% of cases or less. So we have very biased samples when we're looking at those data. And it might actually be the case that the types of offenders that the police catch are those that are more likely to commit repeat victimisation. So the results we get when we analyse those data may reflect something more about the samples arrested rather than something more general about.
So your definition of solved is cleared by arrest?
Yes, it would be in charge. That's then, at least in the UK, the way that the police would count something as detected would be when you charge an offender for that particular type of crime.
But actually arrest more than having a suspect actually physically make the arrest.
The arrest, yeah, and charging them so that it would presumably go to court. Yeah, interestingly, in the UK, the police don't follow through to check whether or not there was actually a conviction or anything. It's just that you were charged. The other approaches we can take are the approaches that George has really been pioneering, which is, along with his geography work, but is ethnographic research. So let's just go and ask offenders what they actually do and find out from speaking to them about the strategies that they actually use. Okay, one of the things that could potentially worry us about this is that the particular approaches we've been taking might lead to some form of confirmation bias. We go into this with a hypothesis that we think is true, and because of the kind of data that we're analysing, it might ultimately be the only kind of conclusion that we can actually come to. It's very difficult to test alternative hypotheses, like the example I gave earlier about asking different offenders, did they burgle homes that another offender they don't know burgled? That's not a question you can sensibly ask. So what I wanted to do here was try a slightly different approach to looking at this problem and use a very kind of very simple form of simulation to look at what kinds of patterns we could generate of repeat victimization when we test the risk heterogeneity theory. So if we build up a very simple simulation with heterogeneity built into the model, what kind of patterns actually emerge from that research? Okay. So what sources of heterogeneity might we build into the model? The first of which, the most obvious, would be area level risk. We know that offenders aren't particularly mobile. They tend to target homes that are located quite near to where they actually live themselves. Also, area level risk might vary with respect to accessibility. Oh, sorry, I missed your talk yesterday, Bill, but Bill was talking about the effect of connectivity on crime risk in areas. So area level risk seemed to be the most sensible thing to start off with and introduce heterogeneity into the model. The second thing that we know from analysis of survey data is that homes that have less security tend to be at a greater risk than those with more security. So at the household level, we can introduce some additional heterogeneity according to whether a home has or doesn't have security measures. Our own work with data from Merseyside has also shown that area level risks and the type of home someone lives in actually tend to interact. So some types of homes are at a greater risk of victimization in some areas more than others. And generally what we find is within an area, the type of housing of which there is the least will be at the highest risk of victimization. So to take a kind of concrete example, if we have an area within which most of the homes are row homes or terraced, detached houses will typically be at a greater risk of victimization than the row homes. Another source of heterogeneity that might influence the time course of repeat victimization is our seasonal patterns. So if we have periods of the year where the risk of victimization is significantly greater than others, that might generate this very short time window of risk that we see.
A question on heterogeneity. I mean,
yeah.
Are you assuming, you're not, but I mean, I don't see it in here, that all potential offenders have the same kind of modus operandi? I mean, there's kids who are bored because there's nothing to do in the afternoon, and then there are pros.
Right.
And all kinds of combinations in between.
Right, right. What I'm looking at here really is just a very basic risk heterogeneity model, just to see what kind of patterns that would generate. It's not an agent-based model. It doesn't have different types of offenders. It doesn't even have markup chains or anything. So it's very, very simple, just to kind of see what patterns we can get by introducing heterogeneity into the mix. Sorry, question?
When you said that if you had a detached house and mixed with all these others, that it would be more likely to be targeted, I assume that it's also true that it's a more expensive property. So does it go the other way around? If you have a lot of expensive properties in the neighborhood,
yeah.
And there's one that's less expensive, is
yeah.
that less expensive?
Yeah, that will tend to be targeted more than the more expensive ones. So yeah, there's kind of an inverse relation between risk and the volume of homes in those areas. Okay, so what data have I actually got and what we're going to look at? First of all, we did analysis of recorded burglary data, so I've shown you the results from that already. Then what I wanted to do is to introduce heterogeneity at the area level, and in order to do that, I draw the UK census output area geography. I did that for two reasons. First, I could have come up with my own area level definitions, but that would be subject to a number of criticisms and difficult to know where to start. So I used the census output area geography for a number of reasons. First of all, it's the particular one I use is at the very small area level. There are typically only around about 125 homes in each of the areas considered. And the way that the areas are defined by the census agency is to find areas which have as much as possible homogeneity within those areas. So same types of homes and same types of people live at those within those particular locations. The other advantage of these data is it gives us access to information about the homes within those areas that we can't get from other data sets. So that would include types of housing in the area, socioeconomic status, and so on and so forth. Final data set that I'm going to use today or talk about today is Ordnance Survey address point data. This tells us the exact locations of all of the homes located within the county. So roughly around about 600,000 homes across Merseyside, and I have a database which details where they're located. Two parts to the analysis that I'm going to talk about ever so briefly now. First of all, looking at the patterns in the recorded crime data, which you've already been exposed to, and secondly, the very simple thought experiment that I ran on a computer. What I did here was, first of all, use a geographical information system to compute the rates of burglary victimization at the small area level. I then took those rates and joined them to each of the households. So each home was allocated the risk associated within the area within which it was nested. Does that make sense? And what I then did is to get the computer to basically simulate what the patterns of victimization might look like over a 4-year period, where the only determinants of whether a house is actually victimized depends on the risk associated with that home, a chance allocation, which is generated using a random number generator, and variation in risk over time, so taking account of seasonal variations. For each of the simulation models that I'm going to talk about, I generated 99 iterations, and then analyze the data in exactly the same way as the recorded crime data. So this is gives you an idea of what Merseyside looks like. It's, the dots you see there are actually each of the different homes across Merseyside, and they're color-coded to indicate the risk associated with those homes. So it's essentially a kind of hotspot map that you're seeing, or it gives you a kind of an impressionistic artist drawing of what the county of Merseyside looks like. I kind of swear, you know, if you look at these things for long enough, you kind of see images kind of poking out at you, know, the magic eye type thing. I don't know if anyone else has seen that. Okay, so basically, the reason for doing that, as with John, I like doing stupid animations, so pictures. So, yeah, okay. Gives you an idea of the fact, though, looking at this, that crime does tend to concentrate, and there's a lot of spatial autocorrelation in the data. You can zoom into this data just to get an idea of how small the areas are that we're talking about. So each of these dots that you see now is an individual household. It gives you an idea of the census output geography, census output area geography also. You can zoom in still further, and each of the dots there, obviously, is each of the homes.
Second question, what do you do if you have multiple, like a multi-story home?
Right.
In an apartment complex, do you count those as just one household?
Actually, the great thing about the OS data is it gives you flats as well. So what you can't see from this is that there would be multiple homes on top of each other. And so they're individually represented within the rendering that I've got.
And so you usually just give them all the same risk that they're...
Yes, if they're in the same area, yeah. I mean, we could do more complicated stuff, but just as a first outing, I thought this was useful to start with. Okay, so just to give you an idea of how the simulation works, I've already talked this through, but we have the county of Merseyside. The black dots indicate where the homes are. Each week, some of those homes are allocated as to be victims of crime. And that's done, again, as I mentioned, on a random process, but taking account of risk heterogeneity across the homes. So we can see, this is output from the simulation for an 8-week period, just showing you how the homes that are selected dance around. Can anybody see that? Excellent. Okay, one thing I just wanted to briefly talk about is one of the methodological issues with conducting analysis about the time course of repeat victimization.
Can I ask about that simulation? I mean, if you have a dense enough overlay of heterogeneity, you're going to fit any data marvelously. But does your algorithm search for some minimal number of heterogeneous spots before it simulates, or how do you determine that? Because you can get a lovely picture just making enough heterogeneity.
Right.
So does your algorithm somehow look for, maybe optimal is too strong, but a
right.
good number of locations that are heterogeneous?
No, I mean, what I'm simply doing here is taking actual data, looking at heterogeneity of risk, observed heterogeneity of risk across areas using recorded crime data.
And then just throw it in a plus on for different locations.
Yeah, and then just, so the simplest model I'm going to talk about is just area level variation. So let's get a feel for what happens when you include area level variation. Subsequent models then test patterns where we throw in extra variation within the areas. And they're kind of just stylized patterns that I've been simulating. And the question really for me when doing this was just to say, when we do that, do we get patterns which actually resemble those in the actual recorded crime data? I don't want to kind of spoil the show, but what we're looking for is two signatures. One is spatial concentration, and the second is the time course of. So you're absolutely right, we test millions of different models and they can come up with the answers that we're seeking. But my question was, of the models I test, can I get anything like the patterns we see in the data? I'll come back to that.
Shane, are you assuming that there's offenders everywhere, so they're just, you know, they're homogeneous? So in essence, they're just going at where the risk is. So it doesn't have anything to do with what we know about.
Yeah, there are no offenders in this simulation. It's purely, I'm not assuming any particular offender is returning or has a preference for an area. We're just saying that as time scrolls on, some areas are at greater risk and those opportunities are going to be exploited. And we're not interested, well, in this very simple approach, not interested in who's actually committing those crimes.
Just a quick note on this. So when you say a risk, it means each house has, you say, like a Poisson intensity?
Yeah.
And that's for every house that you have?
Yeah.
And you've organized, you know, and different intensities correspond to these different...
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're just generating a series of
yeah.
Poisson events.
Yeah,
okay.
It's dead simple. Gotcha. Yeah. Hopefully I've dressed it up to sound more complicated than
okay.
it is. Okay, just talking about the time course analysis, just a word of caution about one of the methodological issues. If we have data for a fixed interval of time, so let's say we're looking at burglaries which occur over a 10-week interval, even if events occurred randomly and it wasn't the same offender returning to those properties, what kind of pattern would we actually generate using these data? So one way of trying that is just to actually simulate the data. So these are houses being burgled on one occasion and a second. So we randomly do that a number of times, and just because I was bored on the plane, I did that in Microsoft Excel. If we repeat that exercise for 30 times, this is the kind of distribution that we get. Looks very similar to the time course of repeat victimization that we saw earlier. The reason that we get that is because we've got this temporal edge effect, where we can't see what's happening over here, we can't see what's happening over there. So it's easier for us to detect repeat victimizations which occur within a short interval than those that occur over longer intervals. So we have to be careful about doing the analysis this way. Two ways we get around this. One is a statistical correction, the other is methodological. I've favoured the latter in this case. And what we do is we split the data up into two periods. We have a historic reference period and then a target interval into which we identify incidents of repeat victimisation. That works because it allows us to identify repeats which occur across any interval with equal probability. The thing that we have to do is to restrict the maximum interval that we consider in our analysis. So if we split this period up into two, so we have a 5-week period here, 5-week period there, we have to limit this to a maximum of 5 weeks in our analysis. It's a simple point. Does that make sense? I might have explained it very poorly. Anybody not understand that point? Excellent. Either you're all afraid of lifting your arms, or I've got that right. The point to make is that this is controlled for in the analysis. Okay. With respect to variation over time with the risk of burglary, this is just from the actual data itself. Time on the x-axis, number of burglaries which occur at each interval on the y-axis. The blue line shows you the weekly count of burglary across the county. The dotted line, which is the mean, is just there as a reference so you can see what variation takes place. And you can see that there is some variation taking place. So I've incorporated this into the model so that we take account of that in the analysis. Okay.
Could you rip up in 5 minutes?
Sorry? I could do, I probably won't, but
I think given that there have been so many questions, we can extend maybe a little longer.
Cheers, Jeff. Okay, this is just to show that I have a rudimentary understanding of the R package and can actually plot graphs that I don't understand, but I'm sure. The purpose of this is just to indicate some of the heterogeneity in the different models that I'm using. I mentioned that I'd start off with a basic area-level heterogeneity model and then sprinkle in additional heterogeneity within those areas. The plot on the left is for area-level heterogeneity. On the x-axis, rather than showing the actual risk across those homes, it's expressed as a ratio to the average risk, so it gives you an idea of how things vary across the homes. So you can see we've got a fairly skewed distribution, with most of the homes having between about a risk around about 1 to about 5 times what we'd expect under conditions of heterogeneity, conditions of homogeneity. On the right, when we sprinkle in within area heterogeneity, we get much more variation. The lines on the bottom are just rug lines to show you where the actual data points lie on this surface. So we can see that there's much more variation in the model on the right. Okay, so what do we actually find when we test this very simple model? First of all, just showing you the data that you've already seen. So on the left-hand side, we have the observed distribution. The simple Poisson model is the next column. And I tested the simulation under conditions of homogeneity just to make sure that it was actually working right and to check that the random number generator was sufficiently random that I didn't get lots of repeats. You can see that these data look very similar to the simple Poisson. I did originally include the standard deviation across the simulations, but it was unreadable, so I've taken those off. But to make it interpretable, if the value in one of these columns is actually significantly greater than the observed distribution, it's highlighted in bold. Okay, so what do we get when we look at area-level heterogeneity? Well, first of all, if you just direct your attention to the number of repeat victimizations, we see that we get many more when we introduce just area-level heterogeneity than for conditions of homogeneity. We're seeing that crime is concentrating quite a bit more just by introducing between area variation. I'm now going to show you a second model which includes within area variation. I've done about 10 of these, but I'm just going to show you one to give you a flavour of it. When we introduce quite a lot of variation within the areas, we get much more repeat victimization, and we actually get a lot more than we see in the observed distribution. So we're seeing we get many more homes being burgled on two occasions, three, four, five, and so on. We can see that for most of these, they're significantly different to the observed data. Okay, so what this is suggesting is that by sprinkling in heterogeneity across the models, we can actually get patterns which are either similar to or produce more spatial concentration than for our actual observed data. Okay, but what about the time course of repeat victimization? Can this kind of simple model actually generate that? If it can't, it's not a particularly feasible theory of repeat victimization. So these are the data. First of all, the blue line is for the observed distribution. The black line shows you the mean of the simulation. The grey line of those simulations, the one which looked most similar to the observed distribution. So we can see for the homogeneous risk, we've basically got a flat line, no time course going on at all. For between area level heterogeneity, the line increases a little bit and we start to get a bit of a slope, but it's looking nothing like the actual time course of repeat victimization. Finally, when we throw in within area heterogeneity, and remember this model actually generated more repeat victimization than we actually saw, get a bit of a linear pattern, but again, we're not seeing anything like the time course of repeat victimization that we see in the actual data itself. Okay, what I then wanted to do was very quickly to say, well, what happens if we introduce event dependency into the model? Just a very, very simple amount of event dependency, so that when a home is victimized, its risk is elevated for a brief period thereafter. What happens when we do that? Use a very simple formula, use many others, but the way to think about this is that when a home has been victimized, the ratio of red to blue balls in its urn temporarily changes for a short period of time. After a while, the number of red and blue balls regresses back to the mean level. Okay, what do we get when we introduce event dependency? When we use the homogeneous risk model, so all homes, at the starting condition, all homes have the same level of risk, but we introduce event dependency, we get slightly more repeat victimization than we do for the basic model. When we introduce event dependency and area level risk, we're actually starting to get a pattern which is very similar to that observed in the real data. So we're getting about 4,900 repeats, whereas in the real data we're seeing about 5,300. And these results are actually not statistically different. Look at the standard deviation at the bottom. What does this generate with respect to the time course? Well, even with homogeneous risk, we're getting something which resembles the time course of repeat victimization. When we throw in area-level heterogeneity, the two curves are actually almost identical. The correlation's about 0.99, so it looks...
This is between area or within area?
Sorry, this is event dependency and including between area heterogeneity. Thanks, Dave.
Okay, I'd like the same question at the beginning, which is, do you have any idea what the actual functional dependencies of this curve. I think in your slide two, you had something that had a logarithmic dependence. Do you have any idea what this curve would be? What functional form would it be?
Oh, is it? Yeah, this is log curve. Is that the question?
What does log curve mean?
What does it mean?
No, I mean, I it flashed by me in the slide two, so I couldn't quite see it. So you have y as a function of x. Y is a function of x.
Sorry, say that again. I wasn't listening. The reason for just showing the log functional form is just for comparison. Typically, the reason we use that is we have.
No, I'm asking something like sort of high school level. I'm asking, like, there's a curve here. Y is a function of x. I'm asking, what is the best functional fit?
Log of time.
It's a log curve.
Log of time.
Log of time, sorry.
Y is
x is time,
right?
And y is the number of victimizations that occur.
That's not log. That is an exponential decay or something.
It's a
I don't know the terminology you're using.
Sorry, if you fit Y, sorry, do you want me to go back to the original slide? I can show you the actual.
Einstein minus logarithm.
Yeah. Do you want to see?
No, I'm just asking, like, you know, Y is a function of X. Is it like 1 over log X or is it A minus log X? I'm just
A minus B log X was what you had.
So,
yeah, Y is A minus B log X.
Sorry, Y equals minus 23.6 log x plus a constant, which happens to be 140.
Okay, and so now, why is that? Why are you using that for? I mean, what's the reason that that's a reasonable fit to the data?
I'm just showing that just to say there is a functional form which fits that. One of the reasons for including that is for the criminologists in the audience. When people have done this kind of analysis in the past, people tend to fit functional forms, and it's just a useful reference. When I showed the slide at the end, I'm actually not interested in the functional form, just whether the simulation generates a similar pattern.
Okay, so there's no fundamental reason for using it, just that
it's good. It's just descriptive. You can tell me later why that's a poor thing to do, and I'm quite happy to take it off the slide. So the point I was trying to make is that by introducing a very simple event-dependent model, we're getting very similar levels of spatial concentration and also the time course of repeat victimizations. A couple of caveats about the things that I've been talking about, the first of which is I actually think I might be overestimating heterogeneity in this model. The reason for that is I'm looking at patterns of risk at the very small area level. When analyses have been conducted before to look at how risk varies at the household level, they're typically bivariate analyses, which take no account of area-level factors. So I think I might be introducing more heterogeneity into my models than that actually exists in reality. Obviously, I'm only looking at heterogeneity which is observed in data that we've so far analysed, so there may be other stuff which I'm not taking account of. There is an element, of course, of tautology in the event-dependent models. The way that I've constructed the model resembles the time course of repeat victimization, so is it surprising that we get that? But the point of central importance is that this very simple risk heterogeneity model doesn't actually generate the time course of repeat victimization that we're looking for. Okay, let's skip that. So, what was the point of what I was talking about here? Really, it was just to... Can somebody else summarize this one? I'm kind of lost. Really, it's just a different way of looking at patterns of repeat victimization than we've actually looked at in the past. And it was trying to come up with looking at the data which differs so that we can triangulate results across studies. The conclusion that I'm coming up with, or tentatively at least, is that the distinct time course of repeat victimization, as we started off with, suggests a common offender returning to the same property. Risk heterogeneity models actually can't generate that signature, so it seems that they aren't, what's the word I'm looking for, appropriate enough to generate that, but heterogeneity does seem to play a part, and I really think it plays a part when we look further down the curve that you saw earlier. The next step with mucking around with this simulation is to look at near-repeat victimization, which is something that Mike's going to talk about later on today. But just to give you a brief overview of that, since Neil mentioned it earlier, it's really what we've been doing is looking at whether it is the case that when a home is burgled, those nearby are at an elevated risk of victimization in the near future. And typically what we found when we do this, using epidemiological statistics, we find that that is the case. So a home is burgled at one location, and homes nearby its neighbour or those on the same street tend to suffer an elevated risk for a short period of time. That is my final slide.